talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
This morning we have on the air with us from Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue, Fire Chief Mark McCluskey. So how's everything going?
Oh, everything's moving right along great right now.
What are some of the big things happening right now in Murfreesboro as far as fire and rescue?
Well, right now we're in the middle of our budget for the upcoming year, but we're working on that. That's a big thing to us, our CIP, working on it. We're moving forward with our medical program. We're trying to get some more paramedics back in school, which has been a big help with our medical response. You know, we got a lot of new construction. We're busy with doing pre-cons on those construction events. You name it, we got it going on. That's including the fire calls and medical calls that we're doing day to day. Also, right now, we have started our campaign with the census, going door to door each day, weather permitting, gathering names for our special census.
Do you see a lot of construction-related accidents, and are they usually at commercial businesses, or are they at homes being built?
We have a few. For the most part, it seems like the guys are pretty safe. It's usually a fall or something like that off the roof that we have. I remember it's been several years ago when they were building the embassy suites out there. We had a bad accident out there. Of course, it's a multi-story. Had someone fall pretty good distance out there. But I don't recall a whole lot of construction accidents, but we do have a few.
It seems like a number of years back, I don't know if it was when the big construction boom occurred, but it seemed like there were a lot of construction accidents in a short period of time.
It was, you know, when OSHA oversees those types of safety violations, if they have any, that usually is what causes accidents. But if they do have them, we're responding to them.
One of the things you brought up last time was a fire truck that's part electric and then has diesel as backup, so a hybrid fire truck. Going into the future, do you foresee buying stuff like that?
I don't know. I'm not a EV type person, but could be the future possibility. I mean, they're making them now and people are buying them. Would it be practical for the city of Murfreesboro? I'm not sure. You know, if it comes down to it, definitely look at it.
What types of new technology are available for rescue workers in general? What have you seen coming up that's brand new?
There's a lot of things that's changed over the years. Safety is a big thing now. There's a lot of safety things out. Our turnout gear is a lot better, turnout boots, helmets. Just our tools that we have make our job a lot safer. You know, I could remember back years ago, we used to have little fans that would basically try to suck the smoke out of the house. Now we're using fans with like 10 horsepower motors to positive pressure the house to get the smoke out. And, you know, it's a lot of things have changed over the years.
How big of a difference does that make for those going into the house, maybe to rescue somebody?
Well, it makes a huge difference. When it first come out, being, I guess, kind of an old school firefighter, it's like, this is crazy. You're putting oxygen on the fire. It's going to burn it up a lot quicker. But I do remember the first time that I was involved in using it. It was a house on fire out on River Rock. It's on Casey Lane on fire. And it's upstairs in the bathroom. Fire was going really good. Pretty hot upstairs, probably anywhere from 800 to 1,000 degrees. So the way this works, you open the door front of the house, start the fan, put the positive pressure into it with the air, and it dropped the temperature at least 400 or 500 degrees in like seconds.
That's crazy.
And it made me a believer that day.
That's a big difference, 400 or 500 degrees.
Huge difference. You know, it takes all those gases and heat out of the house really quick.
And then computer programs and computer-related technology, what has come about that within the fire industry, especially when it comes to, you know, those special cameras where you can see where there's somebody?
Yes, it's infrared camera that we use. It's great technology that we can use going into a house where you cannot see anything. This basically just lets you see through the smoke, picks up different temperatures of the heat, and it outlines the body and stuff, or the person that you're looking for, and it's easy to find them that way.
How clear is that person when you're looking through that smoke?
Now, it's very clear now. In the older days, we had one of the first ones in the state we was using, and the technology back then was not as good as it is now. And we had some issues with it, but it would still work.
Is there also new technology in the realm of working traffic accidents?
Yeah, there are some things that have changed over the years. You know, tools have improved, lightweight. Some of them are battery operated now, which that makes it great without having to stretch out all the hydraulic lines, especially if the car's off the road or something like that. But they're more powerful. Cars are built differently these days. We constantly train on how to extricate people out of the car, It's changed a lot over the years.
One of those big fears I would imagine would be with these electric vehicles exploding because of the batteries.
Yes, we have. We've had classes on that also. Most of them do have a emergency shutoff, so to speak, to kill that power. We do have some special tubes that we plug into the car that basically drains the battery as much as it can right away. But if this battery gets to burning, it's not a whole lot you can do with it. It's going to burn itself out pretty much.
That takes, I guess, could take quite a while depending on the size of the car, how many batteries are in the car.
That is correct. I don't think we've had any occasions here in Murfreesboro yet with the EV vehicle.
And those lithium batteries, do they burn hotter than like just a regular fire?
They do. They do burn a lot hotter and produce a lot of heat.
So far, nothing yet.
Nothing yet.
That's good.
We've had a few in accidents, but nothing major yet with them.
I've seen those videos where they explode. And it's a pretty big explosion.
It is. It can be. Yeah. And speaking of special tools, you know, now in the fire industry, they're making tools to fight those type of vehicle fires.
So does it take a different type of fire retardant to spray on there?
No, you use water. You possibly could use some foam to help, but the tools that I've seen so far, the newer technology, is something that goes up under the car and pierces the battery and actually puts the water inside of the battery.
I wouldn't even think of that. Of course, I'm not in that line of work, but that's an interesting idea.
It is.
When you look at the recent fires that we have seen unfold in Los Angeles and the surrounding areas, have we been able to learn any lessons yet on that, or will it serve to help in a way?
Any big major disaster fire like that, you learn from it. You got to consider California, it's a different kind of terrain than it is here. They have a lot of undergrowth, dry weather, a lot of wind. That really produces the perfect storm, so to speak, for, you know, wildland fires. And there's a difference between wildland fires and grass or brush fires that we call them around here. Wildland fires with the winds blowing, they have been clocked, you know, running 30 or 40 mile an hour across the land.
That's insane.
It is. I mean, that's the reason a lot of them perish in these type of fires. The firefighters, it starts moving on them so quick. I've seen and heard, you know, that the fire moves so quick that they've lost their fire trucks and everything.
You can't run 30 miles an hour.
No, you cannot.
One of the stories that I heard was talking about how the trees, the shrubbery around homes, plus the homes being so close together, but those trees being so close to the homes. And I never really thought about that, but I guess if you're building a house or planning landscaping, maybe you should take that into consideration.
Yeah, it would be. You know, I think in California now, in a lot of areas, they don't allow vegetation around the house. They use a lot of rock and stuff like that just for display instead of bushes and shrubs. But also, it's so dry out there. You know, it's kind of what happened in Gatlinburg.
Yeah.
It was dry. However it started, you know, it's hard to pinpoint how it actually started, but there was, I think, some control burns going on in the area. But those winds got up, and when the winds got up, it was out of control.
Is that something to fear here locally, or do we just not have those dry conditions, or maybe we do during the summertime?
Around here, it is more so out in the county. Here in the city, we're so populated, the vegetation is cut off. We don't have a lot of, now we still do have some fields that may, which we've had like good examples out on Veterans Parkway. There's still a lot of open land out there. I think we had a wheat field a few years ago catch on fire, but it didn't endanger any structures. Normally, if we have any kind of like grass fires around here, it'll burn up to the house, and they don't have enough fuel to actually get the house burning. Of course, if it's brick, it helps a lot too. We've had some vinyl siding melted off before due to grass fires.
What would you say is the best material for that facade of the house? I mean, is there something we can, if you're about to build, is there something you can choose that's better than other things?
Well, everybody likes to go with mulch. Of course, mulch is wood, and wood burns. Some type of like a rock or something of that nature.
And then the brick versus vinyl versus wood. I mean, I'm seeing some houses now being made out of concrete, which is another new material people are using in houses. But what's the best?
Well, you know, any kind of solid like brick or rock is going to be your best thing. It's not combustible, so to speak. But you have to still watch that because it'll have wood in behind it.
Yeah.
So just depend on how long the fire would burn for it to get to that wood behind the brick.
You know, I've never asked, but stuff like sheetrock and the actual insulation that's used in the walls of traditional homes, is that flammable?
Actually, no. The codes now require that. There is some insulation that still gets, that's still in some older houses called a cellulose. It's not really flammable, but what will happen if a spark or something or heat gets into that cellulose insulation, it will sit there and basically just smolder. It won't really break out into flames. And what's bad about it is you may, I don't know, a welder may be over here fixing a plumbing pipe or something, and it gets in that cellulose, it may travel all the way to the end of the house to hit something solid, you know, a stud in the wall or something, and it will sit there until it catches that on fire. Now, sheetrock, no, it's not really flammable. And when I say that, you know, to a certain temperature, everything's flammable, but sheetrock, you're not ever going to get to the temperature in a house fire to burn it. And actually, sheetrock is used for firewalls.
Oh, okay. So that smoldering, or what could actually turn into smoldering insulation there, could it literally burn for days or smolder for days before it hits a wooden beam or something?
It can. It will travel in that insulation until it meets resistance, and it's usually a piece of wood, and it can sit there. Now, a lot of times they burn themselves out, but a lot of times they catch it on the house on fire. And I've been to several of these incidents over the years. You will go up into the attic and find where the source may have come from. And basically, you have to remove all the insulation in the house to make sure it's all out.
That's a big job.
It is. It is.
Again, Murfreesboro Fire Chief Mark McCleskey on air with us today. So when you look at, I guess, different trends and whatnot in building, well, I know a couple of years ago, it seems like there was a push for sprinkler systems in all new construction of homes and businesses. Didn't really catch on, but is that something you're still hearing about?
Some cities will require sprinklers. The closest one around here, Eagleville, has an ordinance in place. If you build a new home in Eagleville city limits, you have to have a sprinkler system in it. That was a big political battle up on the hill. Of course, firefighters wanted it, saves lives. Insurance companies didn't want it because it creates a lot of water damage claims to houses. So some cities have adopted it, but around here, we still have fire codes. Residential, we don't require any sprinkler systems in our residential, but in commercial buildings, depending on what type of building you're building, your occupancy load and all that may require a sprinkler system.
I had no idea. So Eagleville was one of those cities that didn't pick it up.
Mm-hmm. Eagleville is one, and it's usually about, I've heard around 7, 8, 9% more cost onto the house to have it.
So it could be pretty expensive depending on what you're building.
It could be. I have seen, just like you've seen the buildings up on the square, they would be trying to change it to something else that would require a sprinkler system. And the size of those buildings, first and second floor, would be upwards of $100,000 just to do that.
Wow. That is a lot.
Yes.
Especially when you factor in the cost of land these days.
Yes.
Man, so if somebody were to do that, because you did say, you know, some insurance companies don't want it because of the water damage. Is there a risk of those going off, the sprinkler system just randomly going off, or have they pretty much got that figured out?
There's no real issue of just them randomly going off. Here in Murfreesboro, the code is on apartments, if it's two stories or above, it's got to be sprinkled. The biggest thing we see, the sprinkler head to be sticking out, and somebody will hang clothes on them. Or doing something in the house and gets hit with the ball or something like that. And all it is just a little glass tube. And if it gets broken, the water's coming out.
Yeah, if you got kids, I can see that. That'd be a big risk.
Yes. But now I will say, too, in these sprinklers, I've been to several unattended cooking that the sprinkler head went off in these apartments. And they had water damage in that apartment, maybe some water damage below. The apartment is on the second floor, but the cost of fixing that was a whole lot cheaper than what it would have been if it didn't stop the fire.
I was going to ask, when you have a fire, even if it's contained to just one room, you've got the damage of the smoke, first of all, then I guess the damage of, you know, the fire hoses spraying in water too, right?
Yes. Of course, we're going to use a minimum amount of water to get done what we need to. If the sprinkler heads went off, they produce about 30 gallons per minute. So it's going to be some water damage in there. But normally, if the sprinkler head has went off, we don't have to use our lines. We may carry them in. But when you start, when you have a little small fire like that, yes, you got smoke damage throughout the whole house. Normally you got the stove that's messed up, the cabinets above it. All the walls are going to be need repainted. And our hose, it's a real tough canvas type. So if we drag it through the house, it's going to pull some paint off the corners and stuff like that. And it can get dirty, you know, mess the carpet up and stuff like that.
So are firefighters trained to use the least amount of water as they can? How does that work?
Yes, we do that. You just don't go in and just surround and drown, yeah, what we say. You go in and use a small minimum amount of water to help with the damage. Because, you know, water can do just as much damage as the fire sometimes. So, yes, we do that. And not only just for that, to make sure that you still have enough water in case you do need it. Just you don't want to go in just waste the water, then all of a sudden you need it and you have not gotten a water supply established yet.
And that pressure of the water coming out, I would imagine, is pretty strong.
It is. You know, that's one of the things that has changed over the years, our nozzles. We can kind of control the reaction on the nozzle by how far we open it. And if you open it all the way, of course, it's going to have more reaction, or if you just open it halfway. And that sounds like kind of petty, but it's not, because our old nozzles, if you opened them, you were getting pretty much a full reaction out of the water.
So the difference there for sure.
Yes, for sure.
These days we hear all about drones and robots and so forth. Are any of those things, robots or drones, are those being used at any fire departments around the country?
Oh, yes. We have our drone ourselves. We just actually, this past week, council approved us buying some new ones. I have been to some demonstrations of robots. They're more practical in big warehouse fires. The last one I actually went to, they come over and did a demonstration. It was more or less like a skid steer. It would pull its own line in, had the cameras like we talked about on, so they could see what was going, and could fight the fire remotely. Now, as far as a smaller robot going into the house with the hose line now, yeah, I've seen them, you know, but they're not very practical unless the conditions or some reason may be that you do not want to send somebody in there, but you do need to make sure you get the fire out. But now on our drones, we've had them in our department now for about going on 10 years. And like I said, council approved some last week at council meeting for, we're going to a different company. We're DJI. We're getting away from that. We got our three new drones coming in as soon as we order them here. But we use those in a lot of different ways that this type of technology has helped us a lot. One of the big things is search and rescue. It has infrared cameras on it, night vision. You know, if you can take somebody, I've seen it like in a drill we've had, was out at Walter Hill. We had people down the bank at night, and you can take that drone and fly over and find them just really quick and guide people into to rescue them. Not only for that, we've used them in for missing people, especially in elders that walk off, and you know, maybe in a field with dementia or something like that. We can use them on hazmat scenes. You know, if you got something that's kind of serious, you can fly in and do a survey of the area, see what it is, try to get some placard numbers to see what we're dealing with without getting close to it. We can also use them on fires that we have going up and surveying, especially if it's a bigger fire, because we can get live feed of it right then and see what's going on.
How far of a distance away, or how far can you be with some of those drones?
Well, you know, they have their limitations. You can fly them out of sight and not know. But we have trained pilots. We have approximately about 18 pilots now that's been trained that can fly them. But the drones that we are getting, they have basically like collision control on them. If you fly up on a building, it will not let you hit it. It will rise up and go over it or whatever. And the technology with those, you can set the boundaries of what you want to do and the height you want to fly. And they're really safe.
You know, search and rescue, that's a pretty big category that you guys cover, because I guess you could be called in by police or one of the local agencies for,
yes,
that.
It is, and we have done that before. And the police department has their own drones, I think, also. Search and rescue, we're more set up to do it than what they use theirs for. But, yes, with the technology of the cameras and the infrared, to be able to seek the heat, you can go up over few acres in just a matter of seconds, tell if someone's laying out in the field or something.
And then with water rescues, are you able to, you know, the infrared camera, is that able to pick up a certain depth as well?
No, it's not really meant to go underwater.
Well, I mean, above ground, looking down at the water, is that?
Yes, I mean, to a certain extent, you know, as long as it can pick up the heat difference in the body in the water. Normally, if somebody is overturned in their kayak or something, they've made it to the bank or they're out in the water on a rock or something like that. Very easy to spot in the darkness of night.
Have those numbers of the water rescues, have those grown over the years?
They have. As you know, kayaking has become very popular. We do have a few of those each year whenever the weather gets right. A big thing that we have is people try to go when the water gets up with a little flood water because they want those rapids and stuff and end up being too much for them. We had an elderly gentleman that was he was actually out fishing, and he kind of got disoriented how far he went down, didn't know where he was at, and he had wore himself out trying to come back up river and just couldn't make it, and he was stranded. Got him. We've had several different calls. A lot of them have been just people getting lost, overturned, lost their kayak, and it's gotten dark on them. They don't know where they're at, and some are able to get out on the banks, but they don't know where they're at and stuff.
Man, you always hear about those who go into those flooded waters. They go kayaking, canoeing into the flooded waters. They think it'll be fun, but you're talking about really swift currents, even though it's Stones River. It's really not Stones River anymore, at least not the one you knew.
It's not. The water has so much pressure. Just it moving a mile or two an hour down the stream puts, you know, several pounds of pressure on your body.
That's a lot of weight. And then you factor in the depth of it, then who knows what's under the water, rocks,
yes.
Trees, everything.
Yes, that was when I did my swift water training back some years ago. We were at the Koi River having to jump in it. And it was running, you know, wide open. And took you a minute to get used to that. Then I forget the name of the other river we went to. It was swift, but it was shallow. And we had to go down a rapid. I'm not just freelancing out. It's just in your wetsuit and in your life jacket. And that was my biggest fear. What's going to get me under this water? But luckily, nothing did, so.
Now, the Koi River in East Tennessee, that's one a lot of people have been whitewater rafting on, but that the way it looks, you know, from the surface, that's what it looks like when it floods here.
Yes, it does. It's not a lot of difference. It's not.
I guess the only difference would be what the depth. Ours would be deeper because of the flood?
Well, it actually kind of depends on where you're at the Koi, and, you know, it can be deep up there, and there's some spots here that are deep, you know, but when it's all full moving, you know, it's
pretty scary.
Yes.
I don't think I'd want to go kayaking in the flooded river.
No. And the thing about it, when people go, when it's flooding, there's a lot of debris in the water that's different than the Koi. The Koi is a controlled environment. You know, they flood it every day to generate the power. So you're not having to worry about a tree floating, fence, barbed wire, stuff like that in the water.
Yeah, that makes it even scarier for
yes.
sure.
For sure.
Mark McCleskey with us today from Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue. We're going to take a short break, and then we will be right back.
Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City. Come do business with my family. You'll find us at 919 Northwest Broad Street right here in Murfreesboro. As your local pet store, we're here to build relationships. That's just one of the reasons that we've been a staple of the Murfreesboro community for more than 34 years. Come see why Animal City is the trusted choice for pet owners all across town. Visit us today at 919 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro. You can also find us on Instagram at AnimalCityTN.
This is Peter Demas inviting you to enjoy a meal with our family at Demas's Restaurant. With cold and flu season here, nothing helps my family more than having the Demas's baked chicken and rice soup. It was a soup that was created by my grandmother, and we not only sell it by the cup, but we also sell it by the quart, by the half gallon, and by the gallon. So stop by anytime today and bring soup to your family that may be sick or a friend that's been sick, or just to enjoy it just because it tastes so good. Demas's Restaurant.
We're at Adam's Place talking with John Hood. What advice do you have for someone considering a move?
Well, I would encourage them to check out Adam's Place. Come and personally see the facilities, talk to the personnel, and get a true feel of Adam's Place.
I'm Terry Deal, Rutherford County's premier retirement community with all five levels of care. Call me for more information about Adams Place, located at 1927 Memorial Boulevard, across from Walmart.
In today's changing world, you need a financial planner that you're comfortable with. Rely on the bonds that you've built with trusted friends at Old National Bank on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard here in the borough. And if you just moved here, visit us and enjoy warm, homemade cookies.
Honey, the cookies are ready.
Like Grandma used to make. Old National Bank. We're better together.
2230 Dr. MLK Jr. Boulevard. Old National Bank, member FDIC.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue Chief Mark McCluskey in studio with us today talking about fires and everything else that Murfreesboro Fire Rescue work, and you guys work everything from traffic accidents to, of course, water rescues that we talked about, and what else?
Oh, there's so many things. We basically, someone calls 911 if you don't need a police officer, it's the fire department coming. You know, we're an all hazards department. Whatever it may be, we're responding to it. I've been to several different things. Some of the odd things I've been to. I remember been a few years ago, someone lost their alligator, believe it or not, here in town.
Wow.
And they thought it went up under their deck of a house, and they needed lights. So we responded over, shined the lights, and it ended up, I mean, he was about 2 foot long. The young guy that had it, he would raise them as babies, then at certain size, he had somewhere he would send them. But we found him in the garage, though. But you just never know what you're going to get called for. Never, not, you know, animals in the attic. Keep thinking about animal calls. It's kind of odd. You know, I've been to skunk spraying. People think they got some kind of chemical in their house. And, you know, of course, we do our fire smoke detector plan. We go to that. People call. We change their batteries and stuff. And it's just anything somebody calls for, we're going to go. We've actually... someone had a sprinkler in their yard that was going off, and they called it in, and they got it confused with the sprinkler system like we was walking through. So we went over there and took care of cutting their sprinkler system off. It just, you never know what you're going to get called for.
I know a number of years ago, it was in Bedford County, I think in Shelbyville maybe, where there was somebody who owned a monkey, and there was a horrible attack because of it. I think it left one dead even.
Yes.
Are those types of calls? Do you ever get calls like that? I know you said an alligator. Are there ever things like that?
You know, I don't ever remember any monkeys, but you'll be surprised what you see in people's houses when you go in their houses. But I do remember something about that call, but you just never know what people are going to have. I've seen people with iguanas, great big ones, snakes, you know, and that happens when their house catches on fire. Can you go back inside and get my steak? I said, we'll find somebody, not me. You know, I've seen people have a pet groundhog one time.
Wow.
You know, what they give for it, what they told me is like, good gracious, need to get in the groundhog business. But but yeah, you never know what people have in their houses and what they don't have in their houses when you go to them.
When you file reports and investigate the different fires and everything, are you required to report, okay, this person had a bear in their house? Are you required to report those things?
No, that's a good question. I don't know that we're required on particular animals and stuff, but I'm sure if we went to somebody's house and had some exotic animals that was kind of dangerous, somebody would probably be saying something, because some of those are, I don't think you're supposed to have. But
well, when you talked about that alligator getting loose, it made me think, well, what if the next door neighbor has small kids out playing? It could be bad.
Exactly. And you know, this young man, he was set up to do what he needed to do. Just that was a accident that got away from him. I think it was actually getting him ready to ship him off to wherever he was sending him. I mean, he has an alligator, but I don't think he was much danger. It was two foot long, and he was getting rid of him. But yeah, it was some of the odd calls I've been on. It's, you never, just never know.
I know just outside of Nashville, there's, I believe, a elephant sanctuary of some sort where they help elephants who are injured, or I guess who are retired from the circus. Yeah. I don't know what. But we don't have anything like that I know of here.
Not that I know of.
If we did, that'd probably would have been a call that you would have been on by now.
I would think so. Probably so.
Now, when we look at the future of Murfreesboro as it continues to grow, because I know Rutherford County as a whole is supposed to reach around 700,000 residents in the next 25 or so years. I don't know what specific in Murfreesboro we're going to see for the population, but are we prepared for that growth?
Well, not for 700,000 right now, but as the city grows, we grow with it. You know, we're not just going to grow all at once. And in the city council and the administration of City Hall, they do a good job trying to look for into the future to see what we need instead of wait until we get it, then try to provide for it.
I know a new impact fee was put into place in 2023. I think this is the second year for it to actually go up another number. And is that something that you have seen the positive benefits of yet?
I've seen some of the figures or heard them at council, and it's got to help. Yeah, I mean, growth costs a lot of money. The infrastructure for it and providing the services that we provide, the city, you know, police and fire, sanitation, the parks, everything that's provided, it costs more money to do it. So we have to have the money to operate. But like I said, the council's done a great job. We're still, our taxes are lower than a lot of people's here in, across the state of Tennessee.
I think one of the things about that impact fee, the funds, if somebody was building a new building, let's say in Blackman, then the funds generated from that would stay in the Blackman area somehow. I don't know if that's the case with the different departments.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how that works. I know in the city, you know, all taxes are, it's, we don't have a tax of any type that's designated to the fire department. Whatever we take, you get every bit of that. We all the tax revenue is put in basically into one pool, then we manage it from that way.
I know, going back to Los Angeles and the fires there, I know one of the things they talked about was, should they have had more fire stations in the localized area of some of these neighborhoods? And I don't know if fire departments have begun talks of having maybe smaller fire departments within more neighborhoods, or if that's something that has even come up yet.
Well, you know, on the last show, we talked about our ISO rating and stuff. We have a radius that we got to keep around our fire stations. And like I said, out in California, their demographics and everything is so much different out there. They may require more per square mile or something. But here in Murfreesboro, we're always watching that to keep that response time down. So,
of course, we don't have the population that L.A. No. has, thankfully.
Yeah, and the thing about the L.A. fires or out in California, the that type of fire, it didn't really matter how many trucks you had. They had it was very overwhelming. You know, the water system is unable to supply what was needed. You know, just, we have a great water system here in town, but if we go into one area of downtown and open every hydrant, it's probably not going to supply it very well, because you don't think of using every hydrant at one time. Maybe two at a time, the most, maybe four at a time, and our system is well able to take care of that. But the amount of water they were trying to get through their system, it just wasn't there.
It was just massive.
Yes.
Thankfully, we don't have that issue here. But, you know, something else I heard about was private firefighters, which I never heard of until these recent fires.
Yes. A private fire service, giving an example around here, Laverne used to be a private company. Now the city runs them. Another one I can think about, Lynchburg, the Jack Daniels distillery. They have their own private fire service within the Jack Daniels area. That is popular in some places. Like what can happen is, like, say, a gated community. If it's big enough and they have enough funds, they can build their own private fire service that protects their gated area.
Wow. I don't see that happening here, but I could see some of those multimillionaires in California.
Yes.
Having that.
I'd say their HOA fees are kind of high.
They would have to be. I mean, you're talking about a lot of money to fund a fire department.
Yes, quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, other than like a big company like Jack Daniels, we don't have anything remotely close to that, do we here?
No, nothing. You know, you got some of your big places like Nissan or even Amazon out here. Of course, we provide adequate service for Amazon, Nissan's, and Smyrna, but it wouldn't be practical for them.
Yeah, just not big enough yet.
Yeah. Now I do know that Nissan has a little fire brigade with inside the plant that responds to injuries, or if they have a small fire or something like that, that they can take care of. But as far as a large fire, no.
And here, the airport in Murfreesboro, they don't have their own airport. You guys respond for that.
That is correct. It is.
And I guess there hasn't been a whole lot of activity out there over the years. I mean, you'll have fires from time to time, but there hasn't been a whole lot, has there?
Not a whole lot. I can recall a few calls out there, but maybe one fire. It was due to a plane crash. You know, I don't think anyone was even hurt in it, and it caught on fire. Seems like the plane crashes we have happened away from the airport.
Yeah, I guess most of them have been in the county for the most part, other than I do remember one close to MTCS school, which is right by the airport, mm-hmm. and it crashed on a roadway right next to the school?
I believe that is correct, and I can remember another one over in that area where a gentleman crashed, and it ended up in the treetops. It was up in the top of the tree. I'm trying to think. I hadn't been to too many more of them. I know we've had them. I maybe not had went to them, but we do have them from time to time.
Of course, now they've also got planes with parachutes built into them. I don't know that we've seen any of those actually used in crashes here.
Not to my recollection. I've never seen one here in town like that. I'm not sure if it's a busy airport, so I don't know what's coming in and out, but most the planes that are here local, I don't know of any like that.
It is busy. And of course, MTSU, they're slowly moving out to the Shelbyville airport. So I don't know if that'll make much of a difference, because you hear about Murfreesboro needs a space for additional planes anyway. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's going to be a difference in the air traffic or not.
Yeah. Well, just listen to what Chad Gerke's talked about at the airport. You know, a lot of the MTSU flights, there are certain times of the hours that they're real busy flying. But the airport, it's so popular, the location. We have tons of people flying here and maybe go to Nashville, Smyrna. So it's really busy.
Definitely. Again, Mark McCluskey with us today, Murfreesboro Fire Rescue. As we close this morning, if anybody has any questions about really any of this stuff that we've talked about, maybe they're thinking about building a new house and want to know more information about different materials to use, is there a place where people can go and learn more?
Well, you can go to our website. It may have some information on there about that. But building codes here in Murfreesboro, they have a lot of information they can pass out for that. Even though there are fire codes built into the houses here that are built, building codes basically enforces the fire codes when they're building the houses, you know, like fire stop stuff. They make sure in the construction they have them. So we do not go out to every residential and do a fire inspection when they're building. It's only commercial.
So you guys have to inspect the commercial buildings as they're building?
We do. You know, a big structure going in, we may make, I don't know, 20 visits before it's completed. You do it in steps, you know, by whatever part of the construction they're in.
There's a lot that you guys do each day. I mean, when you factor that in. Gosh.
Our inspection division under the fire marshal, they are constantly busy every day.
I bet. Again, Mark McCluskey with us, Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue. Thank you for joining us.